Special number 12661, Mr. Jim Ray, reel 10.
Mr. Ray, reel 10. Well, we've looked at a typical day. How about this bugle contest, the annual bugle contest? How was that organised? You know, how did they actually decide who was to be there?
Well, I can take you back to when we were in England, because...
Right.
All the buglers, they went behind a hedgerow. When called to go, they went. And the bugle major, he gave you certain calls. The bandmaster was in the front, he's an adjudicator. I used to judge by tone, tonguing, the call itself. And... When you finished these calls, you'd vary them, different kinds of calls. That you finished, you didn't know how. You had a number, you see, and the number on the bugle major's numbers on the card, and the bandmaster's numbers were the same. And except for the name next to on the number, we used to draw for. Take a paper out of a cap for numbers of going in turn, and then you went to the bugle major when that man had gone. He'd finished. He went round out the road. He'd done. He went and had a cigarette or something like that and waited. He'd had his. You handed the paper with the number on to the bugle major, and you write your name down on that number, and then you get a signal from the bandmaster, and he'd give points. He didn't know the name, but he judged on points, you see, and the name and the points, they were compared. That's how the competition was held.
Now, that happened in... I thought you hadn't done that in England, because you were too... You'd done that once?
I'd done that once, yes, in England, but I never done any in India.
Right. And the three things, what was good... How did you get a good tone with your bugle playing?
Well, that's a trade secret. You can get a note. It can be a straight, raw note. And you can humour... You can humour a note to a tone by putting that slight quaver in it, making it drift, and it's pleasant to the ear, you see. It isn't a blast note. Ba, ba. See, there's a difference in humour. Humour a note is different to a straight tone.
So, mastery of that. What about tonguing? What was that?
Quick.
Speed.
Speed.
Of note change, or...?
Well, you had to tongue for every note you changed.
And the call itself, that was just accuracy of note, was it?
That's right, yes.
And so, and where did you come in England in the one you did?
Second to Alfie.
You couldn't catch him up then?
I never had the opportunity after that.
So what happened? Why did they not do a contest? I thought it was a yearly thing. Did they not do it in India?
Not so much, no.
And it just never fell?
Well, what was the use? Because we finished all duties at 12 o'clock. It meant there was a bugler absolutely there from after breakfast to 12 o'clock. He might as well have been in the barrack room. There's nothing for him to do.
And would Alf still do that job?
No, he was finished. He was the same as himself then. He was on my level.
So he was just doing... That's right. Taking it turn and turn.
Taking his turn, yes. Taking his turn.
Was there still competition between you and Alf, though? To be the, to be the best, or...?
Well, we realised it, so we just carried on as normal. there was no rivalry between us, I mean to say.
So there wasn't much for a bugler to do, there wasn't much, you know, it was quite a relaxed life, it sounds.
Yes, very relaxed.
Now, what about the Indian servants? Did each man have them, or did the back room have them, or what?
No. The servants were only used in the mess, in the canteens. They were only used in the canteens. They used to have proper headdress on, you know, a turban, and used to be a green band. And all our food supplies was issued by a contractor called Shamsuddin. All the meat you had for your dinner had been freshly killed, cooked, and eaten in 24 hours. There wasn't much refrigeration, you know, like we have in England. If a person died today, you're buried tomorrow.
So you didn't actually have personal Indian servants. What about charwalas, things like that?
Yes.
Were they about the...
We used to get a nappy. He was a chap who used to come round early morning. He had a shave while we were in bed. He'd shave you while we were in bed. A tea wallow would come round. You left your enamel pot on the box, and you'd put your tea in there, and you'd pay him at the end of the month or the end of the week if you wanted to. It was only about an anna, two annas a mug. Very, very cheap. You used to pay so much for the nappy, and the nappy is also the barber's. You get a haircut, the barber's shop.
Any others?
There's the Dersey.
What did he do?
He was a tailor. And
what would you use him for?
Altering clothes.
Your uniform?
Uniform, yes.
What about Dobie Waller?
Dobie Waller was the washman. We used to send our clothes at least once a week, shirts. They used to come back within 24 hours. Dry, ironed. We used to get instead of the numbers, we used to get a Dobie mark, a recognition to the person who wore the uniform. I can remember mine now, a line, T, and a dot at the end of the line, the bottom line. The line, the T, a line, the T, and a dot. And each one had different symbols on the inside of the collar, like that.
And they did a good job.
Oh yes, all starched. You could stand your shorts up and with the starch shirts, immaculate.
Any others?
Let's see, Moochie. No, he was the fellow that looked after your footwear, boots, do the cobbling if they needed mending or stitching. He used to do all that.
You'd still do your polishing now?
Oh yes, we used to do it. Well, there used to be a chico come round. He'd brush your boots and clean your boots for an anna or two annas. But we always used to do our ceremonials ourselves.
That was...
Ourselves. Mm.
Anybody else? Were any other Indians working in the barracks? Or, you know, this...
No, I think that covers it.
How were these, I mean, you could call them these, the servants, but these people who helped, you know, the paid people, how were they treated by the average British soldier? I mean, were they treated well or kicked about? Or how?
No, you didn't kick anybody around. They were very polite. They knew their job. They always used to call you Saab. They always said Saab. Yes, Saab.
And did you treat them with respect?
Yes, I always did. I never saw any ill treatment.
And did everybody always pay their bills?
Oh, yes. Yes, they do that.
What about... So
paying bills, I mean, say, you paid a certain amount of stoppages out of your ordinary pay, soldiers' pay.
Let's go on to your pay then. What did you spend your pay on? How much did you get by then?
Well, I used to get about 6 rupees a week.
And a rupee's 100 annas, is it?
No. We still had English currency. There was, the currency was about one and eightpence or 1 and 10 pence per rupee.
No, but were there 100 annas in a rupee?
No. No, there weren't. No. How many annas? I think it's about either 8 or 16 annas to a rupee.
Righto.
Yes.
And what would you spend that on then? You mentioned stoppages. What would that be for?
Stoppages, haircuts, and shaving.
That was stopped. Stopped out of it, was it? Or no, did you pay it?
We paid that. It was stopped out of it. From our credit side, you see, out of our credit pay.
So it was paid direct to the person
by the battalion as a whole. The company used to put their stoppages in and keep the stoppages from my pay, and that pay was paid to the people such as the Desi and the Dobie and other people.
What about barrack damages? Were they ever deducted?
If any. I don't think there's anything to damage, really.
So what did you spend your 6 rupees on, you know, what you got?
Well, we went to open air cinema, and we spent it in the Nuffy. We paid our weekly bill for tea. That was every morning tea. That used to come to about less than a rupee anyway.
That wasn't paid out to by the battalion?
No, paid by the individual, yeah.
And did you have enough money?
Yes, I was all right. I was never skint.
Did it help not drinking and smoking?
Pardon?
Did it help not drinking and smoking then?
Of course it did, yes. And you could buy fruit. The fruit man used to come out, fruit waller, and... you could buy fruit, and you had to have a permit before you could sell fruit inside the barracks from the commandant, the commanding officer.
But they're worried about, I mean, because dirty fruit can make you ill.
Well, I'll tell you what used to happen. He used to have his fruit in a basket, and he used to have a can of Condi's fluid. And he used to use that for prophylactic purposes, you know, keeping his hands clean and handling the fruit. And when you had the fruit, after being handled, you knew that he wasn't contaminated with any disease he carried, because he'd already had his hands in that fluid. He'd do that every time. His fingers are all brown, because Condi's fluid, it does turn the hands brown, you know. Even though it looks blue, it'll turn them brown. And he used to dip his hands in and give you the fruit.
And it was all washed properly?
Oh, it was all washed.
Or would you wash it again?
Well, if you had an orange, well, you could peel that. You knew it's clean on the outside and there's nothing contaminated on the inside. But nobody ever had any disease from fruit or the vendors that came around selling stuff.
What else might you spend your money on?
Not a deal, really. It's about the lot.
And so how did you get on with the Indians generally when you went out? What did you, you know, in Calcutta? Well, generally, what did you think of them? How did you get on with them?
Well, we didn't.
The civilians?
Civilians. They were all right. They were courteous. They never had any aggravation between soldiers, which used to go out in uniform, you know, walking out uniform, if we ever went out. They were white, white clothes.
Well, you had white walking out?
Yeah, yes, white. No, they're quite all right.
Were there any signs of unrest at all?
Yes, there was. Not particularly in Calcutta, but towards the end of my career in India.
We'll come to that in time.
Yes, there was a lot of unrest.
Okay. What about the Anglo Indians, the people of the mixed race, the people, you know, did you mix with them much? Because in some areas there were Anglo Indian clubs that the soldiers could go to.
That's right. They were all right. Yes. Used to go there and used to play hockey. Used to come play hockey with us. Used to invite them hockey teams and game of football and go for a swim. They were all right. Chichis.
Is that what you call them?
We used to call them half chats. They were all right though. There were a class of people who weren't recognised by the British or the Indian. They had no nationality, you know, they wouldn't. So they lived in like more, not communes, but they kept themselves to themselves, close, away from contact.
Did any of the men marry Anglo-Indian girls?
There's only one, and she wasn't an Anglo-Indian, she was an Indian. Cyril Pickering, he was a bugler. He married one from Bombay. And what happened to Cyril after that, I don't know.
Were people, I mean, generally careful about the warnings they've been given about VD, about
of course
mixing with Indian women?
Yes, I mean, the doctor, the regimental doctor, Arthur Moore, he used to give his lectures, you know, about it. And anyway, if you went out, you had to have a pass to get to go out, and you were always given a prophylactic kit, which was a condom, a tube with some sort of white paste or something inside, and a wad of cotton wool, so you could wash yourself and look after yourself that way. And you had to show that when you went out. And if you didn't use it, you had to show it when you come in. If you didn't show it, there was what they call an ET room, external treatment room, and there's a medical orderly in there, and you get a treatment straight away.
So VD was taken very seriously.
It was.
Was there much of it in the battalion?
No.
So the measures that were taken were successful?
Successful, definitely. I never heard of one anyway.
What about the English community, you know, the
Europeans?
The European community. Did they mix with the soldiers at all?
Not very well. I mean, they were more aloof. They had businesses and things like that, you know, and they were really pucker Saabs, big country clubs, you know, and racing. The Calcutta race course wasn't very far away. They lived it up, cigars and all the rest. He hadn't much time for the old swaddy.
Did you resent that?
Of course I did. Sheer Victorian snobs. The lot. Anyway, you wouldn't go see a swaddy going anywhere near one of our lot, European, English people. Not so at that state, anyway.
So you had more to do with the Anglo-Indians and
yes.
The Indians themselves?
Yes. Because you could get a football team and you could play. The camaraderie between the soldier and the native, it was displayed on the field. And the Anglo-Indians.
But not with the Europeans?
No. No, no. They would steer clear of you just like a ship from like a shark from the side of a ship.
Did a lot of people resent that?
I think so. Well, particularly the army personnel. I don't know what they thought amongst themselves, you know what I mean. I couldn't judge them by what they thought of themselves. But they were the upper crust.
So that was a sort of routine
of
life.
Well, that's seeing it through my eyes and what's really happened up to now anyway.
How did you get on with your new comrades there, the people who'd been there a fair while?
Well, we had a lot of chinwag because they were all new to us, you know. The buglers were new because they belonged to the 2nd Battalion and the band. They were all new, so we had to get acquainted. Quite a few pals, bandsmen.
They were a friendly lot, were they?
Oh, yes.
What about your new band major and bugle major? What were they like?
Well, we took our own bugle major out because the other one, he was finished time.
So Mason went out with you?
Yeah.
What about the band? The bandmaster?
Oh, I forget his name for the moment. Bandmaster. I forget his name anyway for the moment, but he was all right. Quite a good chap, tall, very military, and quite a good band as well.
And how about the officers of the 2nd DLI? Were there any in particular you remember?
Captain Jackson, he was my company commander. The other officers are...
Do you mean the headquarters company commander?
Yes, he was from the headquarters, but I didn't know much about the other company commanders because we never came in contact with them, you see.
What about the colonel and the... You don't remember much?
No.
What was the RSM? You'd see him a bit as a bugler. What was he like?
RSM, he was a smart chap. Very smart.
What did you think of the officers generally? I mean, because they were part of that European community. I mean, they were...
You're right.
They were welcomed into the clubs and everything. How did you feel about that?
Well, I didn't feel anything about it, really. It was up to them where they went.
You didn't think worse of the officers, then?
The officers are all right, on the whole, as we were, as a military unit, you know? But what the officers did in their spare time, we weren't worried. Whether they went to the European upper crust clubs or not, I don't know. Probably they might have done.
So what do you remember about... You were there quite a while, until 1937. You know, you're there nearly 3 years. What do you remember about those years as the routine went on?
Well, very good. Very good indeed. I enjoyed being out there.
What about the winter, the seasons, the changing of seasons? Did that affect the daily routine or where you were? Or
no, just the same. We knew when the monsoons used to come.
You didn't go to a hill station then?
We went to a hill station during the heat of the summer, a place called Libong.
And what was it like up there?
Beautiful. Libong and Darjeeling.
You didn't always go to the same one then?
Well, Libong was the hill station for most troops from the plains.
Is it near Darjeeling? Sorry, I don't know India.
Well, I'll give you an instance. Right, the journey. I'll give you the journey from the plains up into Darjeeling, shall I?
Libon? Yes.
Good. Well, from Calcutta, we travelled by train to reach a place called Siliguri. It was on the train about 12 hours. Now, Siliguri is a station at the foothills. And then from the broad gauge railway, you change to the narrow gauge railway, which is about 2 feet six, where the broad gauge is 4 feet six, only on very small, powerful locomotives. They pulled small carriages, low slung. We sat on like forms in these low carriages, just a little roof on, and a small door at either end for each corner, and that was the transport for travelling on, and the carriages were eight carriages. That was the full load for the locomotive. I started off from Siliguri, and then we started winding what's the most interesting railway in the world, and it's magnificent. As a matter of fact, it's a feat of British engineering and surveying. I don't think there's anything like it in the world. We started off forward. It's a continuous snaking and winding around the hills as we went up from one level to another. And at each point, there used to be what they call the level above sea level. They give you the height, spot heights above sea level. From sea level to the topmost point, the topmost point of where the railway didn't quite terminate. That was the highest point. That was 9,000 feet above sea level. Darjeeling was 8,000 feet above sea level, and Libong was 7,500 feet above sea level. And the incident used to occur travelling up the hills. It was a series of shunting one side and whipping around, changing the points and going around the other side of the hill and worming the way up in that fashion. That's how it went up. And there's a place called The Loop. You might come across it. The train went around in a complete circle on a bit of plateau on the hill. And while the speed of the train, you could get out and run beside for a bit jog and just get on it, because just jogging speed. And when we reached the loop, we'd jump out at one side of the loop, run to the other, run straight down, catch the carriage as it came round and hop on a board for exercise. And the greenery and the foliage and the heights you went up and you looked down, and when you were looking down on the cloud, just like balls of cotton wool settling down, it was really magnificent. And the tea gardens, they always to be laid out in tier form fashion on the hills. You could see the tea gardens as you went up. Reaching Goom, that 9,000 feet, it was really, really cool, definitely. So we pulled our greatcoats on and put them on. And went down to Darjeeling. That was the jumping off point. And we marched down to Libong from there.